You're traveling through another podcast. A podcast not only of reviewing and discussing, but of discovery. A journey into a wondrous show whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the RSS feed up ahead. Your next stop, Anthology. Hello and welcome to Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. If this is your first time listening, Anthology is one man's examination of The Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer. Each podcast, I review one episode of Rod Serling's iconic series and round out the show with a bonus review of a movie or show related to the week's main topic. I also cover modern anthology science fiction shows such as Black Mirror and Dimension 404 in bonus episode review series. You can find more of Anthology as well as a full episode archive at anthologypod.com. And if you want to contact me, you can use the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod. You can tweet me at ObsessiveViewer, or you can send an email to matt@obsessiveviewer.com. Today on the podcast, I'll be discussing Nervous Man in a $4 Room. It's the third episode of The Twilight Zone's second season, and it aired on October 14th, 1960. And for this week's bonus review, I'll share my thoughts on Shatterday and A Little Peace and Quiet, two stories that made up the first episode of the 1985 iteration of The Twilight Zone. And before I get into my review and everything, I just want to point out that The Witching Season, which is a horror anthology web series on YouTube at Witching Season Films, they just released their fifth episode. It's a really great Halloween-esque horror anthology series that if you're into that, you may want to check out because they do a really great job. We showed one of their episodes at Shocktober in Irvington, the local event that my friends and I host at the Obsessive Viewer every year here in Indianapolis. So yeah, check that out. It's called The Witching Season. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's really great. So yeah, and they just released their fifth episode. So congrats. Okay, so before I begin, of course, I'm going to have a full spoiler review of Nervous Man in a $4 Room. So if you haven't seen the episode yet, go check it out on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime. It's available pretty much everywhere. And then come back and listen to my review. So I'll start by reading a plot description courtesy of The Twilight Zone, Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic by Martin Grahams Jr. And here we go. Jackie Rhodes, a habitual nail-biter, is nothing but a nickel-and-dime man. His record with the police lists minor offenses. George, a shady racketeer, visits Jackie late one evening with a proposition to knock off an old man who constantly defied the protection racket. George's torpedoes will be picked up by the police after the killing, so he wants Jackie to do the job this time. George hands the little man a gun and warns him what will happen if the job isn't done. Alone in his hotel room, Jackie ponders whether or not he should commit the murderous act. He starts an argument with his alter ego in the mirror, who pleads for Jackie to let him take over. His alter ego is tired of living an existence in which Jackie makes poor decisions, especially the one he's about to make tonight. After an exchange of words and flared tempers, Jackie finds the guts and goodness to grant his alter ego the opportunity. At 2:30 in the morning, George visits the hotel room to learn why the old man is still breathing. Jackie, now a new man with the name of John, pushes George around and orders him to go away or else. With one problem taken care of, John looks himself in the mirror to see his own reflection, that of Jackie, still biting his nails. Jackie asks what comes next, and John, before exiting the room, informs his former ego that now they look for a job and a girl. This episode stars Joe Mantell as Jackie Rhodes. This is his first of two episodes of The Twilight Zone. Next we'll see from him is in Season 5's Steel. He's an actor that's known for his roles in Marty, The Birds, and Chinatown, in which his character actually speaks the, iconic line of, "Forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown." He worked with Serling again in 1966 in an episode of The Loner titled The Trial in Paradise. He was also the son of an Austrian butcher, and he served in the U.S. Army in World War II. And let's see. Oh, and he also appeared in an episode of the ill-fated anthology series Out There in 1951 in an episode titled Ordeal in Space, which was based on a Robert Heinlein story. And he was also in an episode of One Step Beyond titled The Stonecutter, which was originally going to be my bonus review before Greg's email switched that over to Shatterday. So thanks again, Greg. But that episode of One Step Beyond was aired in 1959. And again, I'm really surprised. One Step Beyond is available on Amazon Prime right now, so go check that out. As George in this episode is William D. Gordon. This is his first of two Twilight Zones. Next is here in a few weeks in Season 2's Eye of the Beholder, which is one of the episodes that I'm really looking forward to seeing. And William Gordon was actually a very accomplished TV writer. He wrote for The Fugitive, Ironside, the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, and also for Chips, which Chips just I didn't get around to seeing the remake. I didn't really have the heart to or desire to, but the original series of Chips is just like, that was something that, like, I grew up watching reruns of it. And I don't know. I have a soft spot for Chips. Writer for this episode is Rod Serling. He wrote this script in response to a request from CBS, in which they asked him to write scripts using as few actors as possible for budgetary purposes. And this episode ended up being produced about $5,000 under budget. Which, I mean, that's an annoying request from a network, obviously, but I don't know. I mean, having just a few characters in a scene or in a whole episode is something that the Twilight Zone does so well. I think it's really great when the show works in that way. Director for this episode is Douglas Hayes, which is his fifth of nine episodes. His most recent episode was The After Hours, and his next will be The Howling Man. So again, we're going to go full spoilers in this episode. So if you haven't seen it, I hope you didn't pay attention to the plot description, but I'm going to be spoiling from here on out. So, what I knew before this episode was actually nothing. I just knew of the title, and the title itself kind of conjured an image in my mind of Arch Hammer from The Four of Us Are Dying. That could have just been because there's a number in both episode titles, and Arch had a hotel room where he planned his stuff. And I was kind of wondering if this episode had anything to do with the con man. So I was kind of close. And let's see. So yeah, when watching this episode for the first time, like, this is the third episode of Season 2. I think this might have been like one of the times where I just really started to fall in love with that opening credit sequence, the new one with the music and everything. I loved it. I thought it was great. So we get an opening shot of Jackie biting his nails, and he's clearly visibly nervous, and he is the titular character, and it's very clear from the word go that he is a nervous man in a $4 room. And then the phone rings, and we get this really it's not an exposition dump, but we get this very harried phone call between George and Jackie, and we get kind of hints of what's going on, that Jackie's been looking for a job, and it's very vague, but it's enough to really pull you in, and it was something that really made me invested in the character. And as soon as he said that when he's reassuring George that he's not going to cop out, it made me think, like, okay, he's a criminal. He's looking for work or for criminal orders from this guy on the other end of the line. And then he says that you can only stay in a hotel room for so long. And that's when I kind of started to wonder if, like, maybe he was trapped in the hotel room. But I'll get more into that little pet theory I had, in a little bit. But I wanted to kind of point out how great the phone call scene is. I just really like the way that it was choreographed and shot, because Jackie jumps at the phone and grabs it, and he's very excited to hear from George. And then, throughout the beginning of this phone call, he moves over to a chair that's next to the bed, and he gets comfortable. But as the call progresses, he moves back over to the bed, and the camera just gets tighter and tighter on him. And it's just a really cool visual cue to show how trapped he is becoming and how, tense the situation is for him. And, just the way that Mantell balances out that character and carries the entire episode is really remarkable. And we get our introduction from Serling saying that Jackie is 34 and he leaves a blot instead of a mark, which I thought was a really colorful way to describe someone. I thought it was cool. So the way that Joe Mantell's made up in the show, in the episode, and the way that we see the sweat on his face and the way that he's just very exasperated and he's exhausted and he's very warm. All of those things combined goes such a long way toward getting us into his level of discomfort, because he is very uncomfortable and very, uncomfortable, and it just really makes us kind of feel for him in a way. Then when George comes in, and we immediately know that he looks completely shady, and that's when I got confirmation that this was definitely a criminal action thing that's going on. And I kind of was wondering, and maybe because he was dressed in a white suit, but I was wondering if George was maybe the devil. I really thought that George was the devil and that Jackie was in hell, and that was going to be what the entire episode was about, which is funny because you can kind of read the episode in that way. And it's in a very subtle way. It's kind of like Jackie is in hell and that George is a devilish character who is forcing him to do something that he doesn't want to do. In this case, George is ordering Jackie to murder this bar owner because he won't pay for protection and won't pay them. And we get this really great scene where Jackie is explaining to George, he's saying, like, no, get one of your torpedoes to do it. I don't have any guts. He keeps saying, I got no guts, George. And I thought that was really great. And the way that we get the way that George responds to it, like, he's not necessarily accommodating at first, but he just kind of loses it and kind of slaps Jackie around. And he explains that if the guy's not dead by 2:30 or by 2 o'clock, if he doesn't go murder the guy, George is going to come back at 2:30 and kill Jackie. I thought that was a really great way to kind of set up the position that Jackie's in. And it's very clearly like a tough spot for the character. And then as soon as George leaves, we get it may be my favorite scene of the episode. It's where Jackie is giving himself a pep talk in the mirror. It's before the mirror version of him is revealed. So it's just Joe Mantell talking into a screen or talking to a mirror, talking to his own reflection. He's giving himself a pep talk, and it's just really great the way that it's handled and the way that it's written. And Joe Mantell just, like, that's confirmation that this episode is going to be great, because Joe Mantell is just really commanding the screen. So it's kind of a fun little tease that we get one really great Joe Mantell scene, or the pep talk is like the primer for us to get two of the same actor just really knocking it out of the park. I thought that was kind of cool. Also, I want to point out the shots that are from the ceiling, like when Serling comes in for his opening narration and soon after the pep talk to the mirror reflection scene. Like, there are a couple shots of Jackie in the hotel room, and but it's from the perspective of the ceiling. And I loved that inclusion because it very much isolates that character, and it really brings home the idea that he's in a very tough position, and it kind of really carries throughout the entire rest of the episode. It's very isolating, and I kind of equate it to being like watching a rat in a maze. And I just really, I like that. I like that a lot. And so then we get the reveal that there's a mirror person, and I was really wondering how they did it in that moment. And I wondered if they used twins again, like in a passage for trumpet. But no, it turns out that it was a rear projection that they used. So they filmed Joe Mantell doing the mirror side of it, and then filmed him doing the other side of it. There was actually an actor who went on to become a director who was used basically for Joe Mantell to play off of. I can't remember his name. I didn't put it in my notes, but something Burton. Anyway, so that was interesting. And once we get in, like, this is when we get into the meat of the episode, and I just love this as a concept. He's basically talking to his conscience or his courage or his rational thinking mind, or really this idea of who he could have been and who he could be if he breaks himself from these really terrible decisions that he's made. It's such a great concept for a character, and for characterization. It's such a great playground to showcase character development and to really dive into a human being and their inner struggle. It's a really cool way to bring that out. And it works really well here for this character, because he is this. He's a character that you kind of unlike the Castles, or unlike Arthur Castle in particular in The Man in the Bottle. Like, Jackie is this kind of, he's not really a sniveling character, and he doesn't seem like a bad guy, but it's just that he is the victim of his own poor decisions throughout his life, and that's kind of what's at play here, is that he's coming to terms with that, and his other half, his conscience, is fighting him to not put himself into, or to not make the wrong decisions, or to stop making the wrong decisions. And I love that the mirror image of him basically tells him that he explains that he's part of Jackie, and he's the part that the actual line is, the part that you never let come out. And he goes on to say that the mirror reflection of him, he says that he has a right to live. And I love that setup, or I love that kind of idea that he's not trying to convince the nervous version of Jackie. Like, he's not trying to convince him. He's not giving him a pep talk or anything. He is fighting for control of their life. And it's a really strong way to develop the drama at play in the episode. And it's a really great way to showcase the character development as well. It's a really great hook for both characters' motivation in the episode, essentially. And then the mirror, Jackie kind of gets this, he drops a bomb to our Jackie, essentially, and references a woman by the name of January. And I love that we don't get like a big whole history with them, and we don't get this we don't get, like, it's just this little nugget of history to this character, and we get the impact of what it meant to him and what it means to both versions of him and who she was and what happened with her. And it's kind of heartbreaking because, like, the man in the mirror says, I loved January. And then he says that, like, she could have, like, the idea is that she could have saved Jackie. Like, she could have pulled him out if he would have let her. But it ended up that he says that she walked out of your life, Jackie, out of our life. And I don't know, the sentiment of that, the kind of, the drama of that is just really, really, sad, kind of devastating in a way, because even the mirror version of Jackie talks about how, now she's left and she's gone on and she's gotten married and everything. It's just, I don't know. It's kind of heartbreaking and everything. When you think about it, and we get like very dramatic moments between the two Jackies. We get very dramatic moments between them, and then right at like the kind of climax of the drama, we get this really interesting kind of sweet comedic beat that kind of felt a little refreshing when Jackie says that no one's going to tell me what to do, and then after he says that, the phone rings and he's still kind of hot from the argument and everything. So he kind of answers it forcefully. And then like, he immediately just like drops down. It's like, yeah, George, yeah, I'm on my way out. We're okay. He becomes like this very, he goes back to the nervous man essentially. And then it all kind of comes to a head, and it kind of, the way it plays out at the end is that we get the mirror version of him saying that he wants a decent job and he wants friends. And I don't know, just like that just hit me. Like that's so amazing to show this inner struggle between these two characters, or between like this inner struggle of one man split into two distinct personalities, and showing that one of them is filled with this anxiety and this fear and this trap that he has set for himself throughout all of these different decisions that he's made that are all wrong. And then we have the other side of it, who is this version of the character that the nervous character never lets take control. And it's just remarkable because that is a character that like, that's the side of the character that is the strength of like, he's a strength. He's the character's strength essentially personified. And he is the version of Jackie that can pull him out of this downward spiral and this life that's being threatened to be ended very soon. And it's just this struggle between the two versions of it. That's the fear and anxiety and the fear associated with turning over that new leaf and making yourself better. Cause Jackie is in this rut and he can't get out of it. And when you're in that kind of rut and you're in that situation, you don't feel like you should have, or you don't feel like other people can pull you out of it. And that's kind of the position that I feel like the nervous version of Jackie is, playing with. Or going through, and it's just really well drawn and throughout the episode. So then after, there's a big kind of spinning mirror effect that I thought was pretty cool. And then we get the scene where George comes back into the room and like, he even says, like, the first thing he says is, "Get up, little man." And it's so demeaning and so just like, it's clear, like where Jackie stands with George and what type of person Jackie is seen to be by George, like the type of person that George sees in Jackie is this little guy that he can slap around and force him to do things. And it's just, it's really great, the brevity of it and the, how little there is there, but how much subtext is there between the characters. It's really remarkable writing. And then we get the reveal that he's now John Rhodes and that he is the mirror version of him. And like we get this great, the great scene where he just says, "I resign." And then he kind of slaps around George a little bit and takes him by surprise and threatens him and tells him that, tells him to get out. And then he's getting out and everything. And I just, I love the courage in John's character in that scene. I just, I love the courage that's on display and the confidence. It's really great. And it just left, it left with me just this really nice uplifting feeling. Like this is a really great uplifting episode for this character. And also when he kind of chases George out of the hotel room and then you see him throw the gun away, it's just, it's, that's a nice touch. That's a nice way to end it and a nice touch. And then we see obviously the nervous version of Jackie, in the mirror. It kind of felt like on first viewing that John was imprisoning that side of him, but through the dialogue, you really get the sense that he's not imprisoning him. It's just he's taking control, and that they're both kind of together. They're one person, obviously. And leaves on that note of John saying that they're gonna go get a job and find a girl. It's just it's a beautifully made episode. It's a beautifully done episode, and it's such an uplifting episode. And I like that we've had two kind of back to back, like uplifting, very kind of positive episodes. I'm really happy about that. And yeah, I think that's it for my review. As far as trivia is concerned, this is this is the first time that the famous lines, "You talking to me? You talking to me?" were said, like before, way before Taxi Driver or Dirty Harry. Jackie Rhodes is just sitting in front, standing in front of a mirror, and he asks, "You talking to me? You talking to me?" That's a cool little, that's a cool little thing. Also, after adjusting for inflation, the $4 that were spent for that room would be the equivalent of $32 as of 2014. And also, if you're in the mood for a dangerous drinking game, Jackie Rhodes says George 56 times, and 20 of them are within the first 2 minutes of the episode. And I'm kind of sparse on trivia this week, but yeah, my overall thoughts on Nervous Man in a $4 Room is it's a really beautiful episode. It's a really great exercise in showing the duality of one character, the two sides of one character, and having them battle it out in a very organic and dramatic way that doesn't feel like it doesn't feel unnatural, even though it is a supernatural scenario and everything. It's really remarkable the way that the storyline concludes and the way that it plays out. I really dug this episode. I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was really, really strong. And again, uplifting, and I love that. Now, before we move on to this week's bonus review, here's a highlight from episode 185 of The Obsessive Viewer, in which is a movie and TV podcast that I host with my friend Tiny, along with some occasional guest co-hosts. This episode is where we reviewed Snowden, and I also talked about The Witching Season, which I referenced earlier in this episode. So here's a clip. Or listen to The Simpsons while I sleep. That's a weird sentence.
Yeah.
But I leave my laptop open because I watch it on my laptop, and I'm just thinking, like, someone could just turn it on and watch me sleep.
Yeah.
Which is disturbing. But it's funny because in the movie, he puts Band-Aids over the thing. And I'm like, when I saw that, I was like, that's such a better way to do it. Like, I felt like an idiot that I didn't think of that.
Plus, it's kind of ironic imagery, if you will. A Band-Aid, putting a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah. You can find The Obsessive Viewer on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and at ObsessiveViewer.com. And you can find the episode you just heard a clip from at ObsessiveViewer.com/OV185. All right, so this week's bonus review was, again, suggested by listener Greg. So thank you so much for the recommendation. That's one of the things that I, like, the conceit of this podcast is that I'm going through The Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer. So I don't know, like, what episodes of The Twilight Zone have future episodes of have remake episodes or anything like that. I don't have that information in front of me, so I kind of have to play it by ear, week to week. So I'm glad that I got the tip on Shatterday. My bonus review, of course, is the first episode of The Twilight Zone from 1985. This episode has two stories. It's Shatterday and A Little Peace and Quiet. So first I'll start with Shatterday, which is very closely related or similar to Nervous Man, A $4 Room. It stars Bruce Willis. It's based on a short story by Harlan Ellison and directed by Wes Craven, of all people. That surprised me. I was really, really pleasantly surprised by that because I'm a big Wes Craven fan. I mean, I kind of grew up loving the Scream franchise, oddly enough. And I mean, when he passed away, it kind of brought like this realization to my life that his work is the reason why I probably like seeing Scream put me onto a path that led, like, I probably wouldn't have podcasts. I probably wouldn't be as into movies and TV as I am if it hadn't been for Wes Craven and Scream. So yeah, I kind of respect him a lot. And it's really fitting that Wes Craven directed this. It's funny to me that he directed a very phone heavy suspense story for The Twilight Zone 11 years before Scream, which obviously is very phone centric. So I thought that was kind of a cool coincidence. And I kind of like the phone conceit of the episode. Like, I like the phone aspect of it because it makes it more tense than the mirror image storyline. This is a more intense kind of cat and mouse game and a struggle between two characters to take ownership of their life. So that's vastly different from Nervous Man in $4 Room, but it works in this context. It's pretty cool. And the whole kind of thing is that basically Bruce Willis is in two places at once. He's at a restaurant, he's at a bar, and then he's also at his apartment. So he calls himself, he and the both Bruces talk to each other, and the kind of idea is that they're going to get the kind of idea is that Bruce A wants to get Bruce B out of the apartment so that Bruce A can live his life. And it turns into a like I said, a very interesting game of cat and mouse, despite my really haphazard way of describing it. One thing I didn't really like about the episode, I don't know if I would say I didn't like it. I just was bothered by it. There are title cards for each day. So it's like Someday, Doomsday, Woundsday. And like, it's like a play on words or a play on words of each, day of the week. And I just thought that kind of cheesed it up just a little bit. And there's a whole idea of that the one who actually deserves to be Bruce Willis's character gets the life. And it kind of plays with some concepts of conscience and the weight and the toll of being honest with yourself. Cause Bruce, the first Bruce we see kind of goes through this very, very, terrible, not transition, but he gets progressively worse and worse as the episode as the story unfolds. Like, he gets, like, he becomes very disheveled and very, I don't know, very disheveled and very out of it and kind of crazy. I'm being vague because I don't want to spoil it or anything, but overall, I thought it was solid. I liked it. Thought it was a cool way to introduce the Twilight Zone, the 1985 version of the Twilight Zone. And it felt like overall like this, it felt like a self-improvement parable that I kind of dug that. I thought that it was a cool way to kind of bring about that that theme, essentially. And it also gets some pretty good points for me for being fairly intense, and the tension of it was pretty well done. And I like kind of the, not necessarily horror elements of it, but the tension of the phone conversations, I think was really the episode's strengths. And I liked it. The other half of the first episode of The Twilight Zone from 1985 is A Little Peace and Quiet, which is about a woman who is kind of really stressed out from having a bunch of kids and just being really stressed out. And she finds a watch that allows her to stop time at will, which, first of all, that is like my number one, like, fantasy, supernatural fantasy thing is, like, I want to be able to stop time. Like, that would be incredible. But yeah, so anyway, so the beginning of the episode shows that she lives in a very hectic household. She's kind of at her wit's end. There's stress all over the place. Kids are really out of control. She has to help her husband with a lot of stuff. It's very, like, they hit us over the head with how stressed out she is. And it just solidifies that I don't think I ever want to have kids. Like, nothing against people that have kids. I admire you guys, but I want to sleep when I want to sleep. I don't think I ever want to have kids. And just seeing that in this, seeing the way that this episode portrays the harried lifestyle of the, of kind of the standard, like, nuclear family, it's just like, I'm like, nope, I'm good. I think, having a cat is probably the maximum amount of responsibility I can take. Anyway, so the episode keeps hitting us over the head with, the mom's stress levels. Like, there's the morning scene of the hectic aspect of in the morning. Then, like, there's a scene in the store where she's freaking out, or she's not freaking out, but the kids are all being very, obnoxious. And I mean, sure, we need that. It's just, it gets a little repetitive after a while. I don't know. I kind of started to lose my patience just a little bit with it. But then as soon as she learns that she can stop time and everything, you know, it's kind of nice because she enjoys herself. She, like, that brings her happiness. And I really responded to that. There's kind of this whole subtext throughout it that I won't go into too much of it. It's about kind of the world, the state of the world at the time. And it kind of leads to this, surprising ending that I really enjoyed. I really thought that it was a clever way to end the episode. And kind of horrifying, in a way. I really respected that. I thought it was cool. Also, one thing that I thought was really interesting, it was because, as I said, as a concept, I love this idea of being able to stop time as much as you want or at any time you want. Because clearly, if you guys pay attention to how infrequent these episodes come out, but like, as someone myself who clearly has crappy time management skills, this is such a big fantasy of mine, and it always has been. And this episode kind of showcased something that I never really considered about it, in that with this power, there's no fear of conflict. She's at the store, and she's kind of fighting this woman, or arguing with this woman, over the last particular type of cereal that their kids love. And so it's just like an easy solution. Just like pause time, take it, leave the store, and you know, you completely avoided any kind of conflict. And it kind of also comes into play a little bit later when she gets visitors at the door that are asking her to support this debate that they're having. And it's just, it kind of gets a little bit heated, but then she just freezes time and then moves them. It's fun, and it's a cool way to kind of, it's a cool aspect of that power and that plot device, I guess. So overall, I thought that A Little Peace and Quiet was pretty cool. I'm glad that Shatterday was kind of the lead, because it feels a little more Twilight Zone-esque, I guess. A Little Peace and Quiet was very Twilight Zone in its own right, but it was more of a light... I don't even want to say lighthearted, because the way that it ended, it was very, very much not lighthearted, but... But it kind of seemed more comedic, or more, well, at least the first two thirds of it were more lighthearted than anything. And I mean, that covers my bonus review of Shatterday and A Little Peace and Quiet, from the Twilight Zone's 1985 remake. I enjoyed it, and I'm glad that I own the DVDs from, the box set that I have. So eventually I'll go through it all and I'll watch it and likely review everything on here. Obviously this is years down the road, but I'm looking forward to it. The more that I watch the 1980s Twilight Zone, the more intrigued I am by it and the more interested I am in it. But obviously I have a long road ahead of me with the original Twilight Zone, so we'll get there. But so I guess that does it for this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. And, of course, if you want to help support the show, you can go leave a rating and review on iTunes, or you can donate, to the podcast through PayPal by clicking the donate button on anthologypod.com or becoming a recurring, sponsor at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. And yeah, next week on the podcast, or next time on the podcast, I'll be reviewing A Thing About Machines, which is the episode 4 of season 2 of The Twilight Zone. At the time of this recording, which is immediately after my recording of last week's episode of The Man in the Bottle. So if my voice sounds hoarse, that's why. It's 3:30 a.m. and I just recorded 2 episodes of the podcast. But that's fine, because in like 15 or 24 hours, 36 hours, I'm going to go to work in a call center. So cool. Anyway, at the time of this recording, I don't have a bonus review for A Thing About the Machines. I actually haven't watched the episode yet. So I don't actually have a frame of reference for what the bonus review could be. But I'm sure I'll mention it on the Facebook page. Just make sure you like the page and everything. And make sure you check out my, if you want to, my bonus review series on Dimension 404. It's interesting because I'm coming off of doing a bonus review series on Black Mirror, which is a show that is established and that I know that I love and that I really enjoy. And so this is a different beast by going into Dimension 404. This is completely new, and so some of the episodes may not be quite to my liking, and so it's interesting checking that out. So anyway, check out all that at anthologypod.com. And once again, thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Hey guys, before I end the episode here, I just wanted to make a special announcement that t-shirts for Anthology Podcast are now available. I just uploaded the design onto tpublic.com, where you can go and just type in Obsessive Viewer or Anthology Podcast, or click the link in the show notes of this episode, or at anthologypod.com/036. That link will take you to the design for the shirt. So basically, you just go... pick a shirt, Pick the color, and it'll get printed on this pretty nice cotton shirt. I bought a bunch of shirts from TeePublic lately, so I'm really excited to have official merch on the website. We also have some other merchandise there. There's like travel mugs, coffee mugs, laptop cases, phone cases, stickers, notebooks, a bunch of stuff you can get that has the Anthology logo plastered all over it. So yeah, go ahead and check that out. And as a special bonus, since I just now uploaded them, all of the products for Anthology on tpublic.com are currently at a discount. So you can save like $3 if you buy them within the next 48 to 72 hours. So if you're listening to this and you want to both support me and show your pride for being a fan of Anthology, go check that out and buy a shirt or sticker or something. I'm really excited for it. I just ordered mine for Indie PopCon here in a couple weeks, and I'm excited that I'll have that. So yeah, once again, I'll go ahead and end this episode here, and hope you guys have a great one, and thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For more of Anthology and a full archive of my episodes, go to AnthologyPod.com. And if you want to help support the show, the easiest way you can do that is by leaving a rating and a review on iTunes. You can also make donations to the show courtesy of the donate link in the show notes of each episode and on AnthologyPod.com. For recurring donations, you can become a patron at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and just choose one of the Anthology reward tiers. If you enjoy Anthology, feel free to check out The Obsessive Viewer, a weekly movie and TV podcast I host with my friend Tiny and occasional guest co-hosts over at obsessiveviewer.com. You can also join The Obsessive Viewer Facebook group at facebook.com/TheObsessiveViewer. For book reviews and commentary on the world of reading, check out our sister site at obsessivebooknerd.com. And for philosophical discussions from a secular viewpoint, check out my friends Chad and Amanda at thesecularperspective.com. Finally, if you'd like to contact me with your thoughts on the show, my reviews, my bonus reviews, or for any other reason, you can tweet me at obsessiveviewer, send me an email at matt@obsessiveviewer.com, or send me a message on Facebook and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod. Once again, thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.